Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of the Philly Sports Cave and the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. We're on episode 9 now, ready to talk some Sixers and some basketball today, as well as some Phillies. I'm your host, Kyle Watts, and with my co-host here is Eric Jacinto. Eric, it's good to be back.
Yep. How are you today, Kyle?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, so the Phillies, for most part of the season, we're in first place in the NL East division. The game got postponed tonight at Washington due to rain, and it's going to be made up this Wednesday, the 19th. I believe it's a day-night doubleheader. I could be wrong on that, but
yeah, 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock.
Okay, yeah, that's what I figured. So that game will be made up, and obviously, you know, the Phillies currently stand at 39-32, two and a half games back of division-leading Atlanta. It's kind of been really hot lately. The division was kind of going back and forth early on. The Phillies started out 3-0. Obviously, all before all the injuries, they had the big free agency signings. And you're getting Harper, you're getting McCutcheon, you're getting Robertson, Segura, Hoskins is moving back to first, and now they're kind of starting to – I know it's not even halfway through the season, but they're kind of struggling this month and they're starting to fade. Eric, lately, and obviously they've drifted back into the second place, although they're still in the playoff hunt. What have your thoughts been on the Phillies' recent play over the last, you know, couple months in this June so far, and the way the Braves have kind of took control of the division?
I just think it's just a combination of our injuries. I'm not trying to make an excuse. Everybody has injuries. The Yankees have more injuries than any team, and look at them. But it's a combination of our injuries, our bad play, pitching-wise, and the Braves just getting hot at the right time. And right now, they're the hottest team in baseball. And we're not, and I go with the territory of the baseball season. Hopefully, we haven't played our best baseball yet, so hopefully that comes soon. Hopefully, we can just tread water and just keep up with the Braves, and we see them in 2 weeks, so hopefully we won't be too far back by any time we play them again. What do you think?
Well, I think it was kind of interesting because you get blown out 15-1 in Atlanta yesterday. You know, you win a close one on Saturday night, and they're playing. The Phillies have been playing some good small ball. I know we kind of agree to disagree on our perception of Kapler as the manager, but I think we can both agree that he's playing with a tough roster. He's playing with an injured roster. I will give him that. That I don't agree with a lot of his moves, but the people that are, you know, judging him for, I mean, if you look at all these injuries that I have, I mean, some of the players that I mentioned that we pick up this offseason are injured, and guys are having to be shuffled around constantly, and you know, it's really difficult. So despite the fact that they've lost 3 out of the last 4 games and 5 out of the last 7. And some of those games were obviously against Atlanta. 2 out of 3, they lost to kind of, you know, put themselves behind in the division the way they have. Because at one point they were 11 games over 500, and now they're, you know, 7 games, which isn't a huge deal. But honestly, I think they played a little bit better than people would have expected. But Let me ask you this before we kind of discuss some of the games coming up for the Phillies. With the Braves recently taking control of the division for the time being, do you think that the Braves being the division leaders is because they've kind of taken control of it, or do you think the Phillies have kind of shot themselves in the foot and kind of helped the Braves out in that way just because of their bad play and the injuries? Do you think it's a combination of both, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a combination of both. I think the Braves just got hot at the right time when we're struggling. So it's like, I'm not saying the Braves are not good, but it's like they got hot at the right time when we're struggling, we have injuries and all that. So it'd be interesting to see if they got injuries, how would they play? They have a deep farm system and deep roster, so I mean, they're bound to cool off at some point. So it's just a matter of, can we take advantage of when they cool off, can we take advantage of that and get hot? So they took advantage of, they've taken advantage of our injuries and our struggles at the right time. So it's going to be a fun summer.
They had an 8-game winning streak from June 7th until the 14th, and they won 9 out of the last 10. And like I mentioned, the only loss in that streak was that 6-5 Phillies defeat on Saturday night. You know, so the Phillies have won Friday. A lot of division games. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of division games coming up, and there's a lot to be had for, you know, a division. And there's a lot of things up in the air as well. So let me put it this way. I think the division race is far from over. Obviously, we have over 100 games remaining. There's still a significant amount of division games. Coming up, like I mentioned, we have this four-game set, including the day-night doubleheader that you mentioned with Washington at Washington, including the doubleheader on Wednesday, and that series ends on Thursday. And then you have a three-game home set at Miami. I think they really have to sweep that series. I mean, there's no reason.
They're back at home.
I know. And you're playing arguably the worst team in the majors. There's no reason why. I realize the Phillies are injured right now, and obviously, you know, Herrera is on administrative leave because of his possible suspension, and some other guys are not playing well, and that's bound to happen. But, you know, if you take if you win three out of four in Washington, let's say they do that, you have a chance to, you know, increase your hot streak with a good performance in that upcoming series versus Miami. So honestly, their next they don't play a non-division team again until almost a month from now, July 15th. So come next month, they have a chance to be in first. They play, you know, pretty much every team in the division. They stay at home in a week from now versus the Mets for a few night games and an afternoon game. And then they go at Miami and at Atlanta and then at the Mets. And then before they face non-division teams, they play Washington at home. So they have a real good amount of stretch of games here leading up till, you know, almost the All-Star break where it's nothing but division games. What are your thoughts on that stretch where, you know, you have like, you know, a good 20 game stretch here where you're just playing division teams?
Yeah. I honestly think in reality right now, the way they're playing, I think they're going to split with the Nationals. They should sweep the Marlins. And I think they can take three out of four from Mets, and then sweep the Marlins again, maybe 2 out of 3 if it's in Miami, but they struggle on the road. And then the Braves series again. I think they need to take 2 out of 3 there. And then yeah, the Mets, 2 out of 3 before the All-Star break, and then come back home and take 2 out of 3.
Yeah, so they have a huge opportunity coming up. Like I mentioned, the game tonight was supposed to be played in Nationals Park. Jake Arrieta was supposed to get the start against Patrick Corbin. But Arrieta will go tomorrow, 7:05 start in Washington. Arrieta is 6-5 with a 4.31 ERA this year versus Corbin for Washington, who's 5-5 with a 4.1 ERA. A little bit more strikeouts for Corbin, 94-70 for Arrieta. Last start for Arrieta, he allowed 3 runs in 6 innings. And his last 9 starts, he has a 5.4 ERA, whereas Corbin, over his last 3 starts, has an ERA over 11. So neither starter has really been productive in their roles as, two or three, type pitchers. What are your thoughts on that matchup tomorrow night between those two?
I think Jake needs to come out and give us maybe 7 strong, if not 8. I know that's a lot to ask for, but he's a veteran, and we need to not go to our bullpen early, because we have a doubleheader on Wednesday. So we need to save that bullpen for Wednesday, because in the doubleheader, you never know what could happen.
Yeah, Arrieta has been a toss-up the last couple years. I really think at the time it looked like a good deal, because he was such a solid pitcher for that 2-year stretch, 3-year stretch with the Cubs. He had the Cy Young win, but honestly, he had a couple good seasons with Chicago. But Arrieta really hasn't been an innings guy. He hasn't had over 200 innings. You just mentioned, needing to have Arrieta go deep in the game so that we don't deplete the bullpen before the day-night doubleheader on Wednesday. But Arrieta hasn't had a season with 200 or more innings since his Cy Young year with Chicago in 2015. Last year, I know he's fought some injuries, but regardless of that, he hasn't been a guy that's really been giving you a whole lot. Honestly, I haven't really been impressed with him. Last year, he was below average. This year, he's been even worse. There's still time to be, made up. But this year, he's allowed over 9 hits per 9 innings. So he's averaged over a hit per game. His home runs averages are up. So this pitching staff's been really erratic for the Phillies. And I know we talked about this, recently, getting into the pitching staff real quick. But Aaron Nola's been another example of that. He's been really bad. Last year, he was one of the best pitchers in the National League and was a top 3 Cy Young contender, was just consistent all year. Obviously, as he went with several great pitches. And this year, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just his pitches aren't working or his command, but to give you an idea, as bad as Arrieta is at allowing hits, Nola's been even worse. He's allowed almost 10 hits per game. His strikeouts are up a little bit, but his strikeouts are not offsetting the amount of runs he's given up too. He has a 4.889 ERA. He's getting a good amount of run support, but what are your thoughts on Nola throughout the first, 70-plus games of the season so far, and how he's been compared to, last year?
I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know if it's injury or it's mental, or he just didn't get in shape this off season or something. because he is not the same Nola that we come to love last year. He's giving up home runs. He's giving up what? Like, he has an ERA of 4.89 since last start against Atlanta when we needed him the most. He gave up 5 runs. The time that we needed him to go deep in the game so we can save the bullpen, he only lasted 4 1/3. Luckily, we came back and won. He gave up the lead before he was taken out. He had a four-two lead.
Yeah, he had a lead.
Before he gave up the home run.
It's interesting because Zach Eflin has emerged. He was like coming into the season like the number three or four starter in the rotation, and he's been their best guy by far in the rotation. 2.81 ERA. I don't typically go by wins and losses just because some guys are getting better run support and whatnot. But he's been really solid. His WHIP, his walks and hits divided by innings pitched, is right around 1.1, which isn't bad. His strikeouts are up a little bit, and he just seems like he has control of his pitches too. He doesn't throw a lot of innings, but Nick Pivetta and Jared Eichhoff have been disasters. You know, Nola's been unpredictable, and his near Cy Young season of last year is looking a lot like an anomaly, just like a season just totally far fetched from what it looked like his rest of his career has been. And I think Jake Arrieta is, you know, a veteran arm and a guy that has some experience but just hasn't been able to relive some of his past magic. And I think part of that's age and part of that's just, you know, mechanics and whatnot. And he hasn't been able to shake that. So, and obviously I know they've had injuries in the bullpen too. And then you lost, like I mentioned, Robertson, who coming into the year, I don't think he had a definitive role. Obviously, a guy that was throwing a good amount of money, veteran guy, could be the closer, but also could be, you know, Dominguez's setup man. And he's unfortunately been shelved this season and put on the 60-day DL. With a grade 1 flexor strain in his right elbow, and he's not supposed to return at least until the next month, a few more weeks. But coming into this year, he played 12 years. What were your thoughts on the Robertson acquisition and what his role could be once he returns from injury?
I honestly loved it. I thought he was going to be. I actually thought he was going to be the closer when we acquired him. But when he comes back, I think he should be the eighth inning guy. And then if Dominguez does come back, because apparently he's not getting Tommy John, so which is a good thing. I think if he comes back healthy, either one should be the eighth inning guy. If both come back, then you can, miss and match or whoever you want to go to the eighth inning. You're going to have maybe like pitch counts for those two because of their elbows. Once they come back, you're going to have maybe not pitch them back-to-back games. So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, the bullpen, I mean, the team's been bad enough because you obviously lose McCutcheon, you know, with the torn ACL. And then, you know, Bruce gets injured after having that hot start. Herrera's on, you know, administrative leave, so you can't even utilize him. But in the bullpen, they've had a string of injuries, not only Robertson, but Adam Morgan, Dominguez, Tommy Hunter, and Victor, is it Arellano?
Yeah, I think he's out for the season.
Yeah, he's also on the 60-day DL, and he actually had, I believe, successful arthroscopic right elbow surgery. So his timetable for return is unknown. So you have all these slew of injuries in the bullpen, and you know, it's kind of shaking things up a bit. You know, Naris pitching well, other guys not sure where their roles are. Morgan was pitching well. Robertson, you know, was looked at as a key signing by a lot of people this offseason before his injury. You know, a lot of people think Vince Velasquez, who I think they should cut ties with, could be a bullpen arm, but, you know, he's just been too inconsistent. Is there anybody you think they should promote from Lehigh, or anybody they should sign, or anybody they should trade for at the deadline to kind of complement or help, for lack of a better word, this injured bullpen?
I like Garcia. I think they should give him more of a chance. And I like JD Hammer. I think he has. They both have good stuff. I think they can be both utilized in late innings if need be. Just a matter of just Tapper trusting them, and them having confidence in pitching late in the games. As far as getting somebody, I think you mentioned a name in the chat that we were in. Shane Green from the Tigers.
I think
he's a name out there you can get.
They do have some options.
Yeah. It's just a matter of contesting,
you know,
and trades.
The lineup really hasn't been helping the starting staff really all that much. As bad as the rotation's been, minus Eflin, and you know, occasional, you know, solid starts by other guys, they really haven't had consistency in the lineup either. I know, like I mentioned, McCutchen's injured, and you lose Odubel. Odubel's not a huge bat, but it is productivity. But this year in the National League, among the 15 teams, the Phillies are almost dead last in stolen bases. They're 14th out of 15th National League teams in stolen bases. They're 10th in slugging out of those 15 teams. They're 9th in total OPS and home runs. They're 12th. Hoskins has, you know, been their best guy. Real Muto has been solid, and you know, I think he's Gene Segura has been pretty good as well. And you know, Harper, his average, you know, has been right below 250, and his own base percentage really hasn't been as high to kind of offset not only the amount of strikeouts, but just the poor batting average. I really thought he would improve that. Despite the fact that he got this mega contract and record setting this past offseason by the Phillies. But I know he had a low batting average last year with Washington. It was .249, but he also led the league in walks, and he had a OBP near 400. I'll first start with Harper. What were your thoughts so far on his season so far? Do you think he's you know, been disappointing, or do you have any ideas on that?
I guess he's been kind of disappointing, especially the amount of home runs he has. He only has 12. I expect to maybe at least be like top 8 in home runs. I don't know, what is he in? Top, let me check. National League.
Yeah, he's up there, I just don't think he's really been the go-to guy so far this year. You know,
top
defensively,
35.
He's had defensively, he's had some issues as well. He's never been a great defensive guy, but I expect him to be a little bit better than this. I've actually been disappointed.
Yeah.
I know certain guys, they go through, like, hot streaks, and you know, they struggle during different months of the season. But Harper was actually a guy that typically early on does well in the first month of the season, kind of cools off, and then in the dog days of summer, seemingly, statistically speaking, starts to heat up. Like, for example, in his career, in April and March, Harper is a career .298 hitter with a .428 OBP, and then he kind of cools down in May and June, a little bit in July, and then in August and September and October, you know, he's, you know, more improved. So I'm hoping that will be the case, you know, maybe if they add a bat before the July 31st trade deadline, and the not only the team warms up, but the weather warms up, I'm hoping that'll be kind of the end be all of, you know, this seems like the streak that he's in. I know that hitters go through streaks, but it seems like it's more of a funk than just a little mini streak that he's going through of bad luck. So I expect him to turn it around. I think Hoskins has been solid. So you know, unless you had any other thoughts, we wanted to get to the big Anthony Davis trade in the NBA the other day. The off season's really interesting. Obviously, the Raptors win their first NBA championship, the first title, and since they've been around since the 90s. And obviously, Golden State's struggled with some injuries with the loss of Kevin Durant, not only throughout the most of the finals in the NBA this year, but not only in the NBA finals, what I meant to say, but throughout the potential 82 game 2019-2020 season. And then obviously on top of that, Lakers were trying to improve their team. Magic Johnson steps down as president of basketball operations a couple months ago. They get a new coach. Luke Walton is gone because, you know, for several reasons, some personal. And then Anthony Davis, who was with the Pelicans, requesting a trade 2 days ago. Pelicans and the Lakers finalized and came to an agreement on the trade just between those two to send Davis. The trade will be finalized July 6th, which I believe is when free agency starts. But the agreement's already in place to send Davis to the Lakers in exchange for point guard Lonzo Ball, forward Brandon Ingram, guard and former Villanova alum Josh Hart, as well as three first-round draft picks, including the Lakers' upcoming number 4 overall selection in this year's upcoming 2019 NBA draft in New York, which actually starts later this week. So Thursday's the draft. Pelicans already have the number 1 seed. The number 1 draft pick, and we'll probably get Zion. So I know this kind of shook up the NBA, but I know that Davis was looking forward to being traded for a while. Eric, what were your initial thoughts and thoughts now as you look back at it on the trade that the Pelicans did with the Lakers giving up Davis?
I think I was shocked at the trade because I didn't think the Pelicans would be trading with the Lakers after what happened during the season. But I'm surprised they didn't ask for Kuzma. I thought they should push harder to get Kuzma, but I guess the Lakers wouldn't budge or something. I think the Pelicans made out good on this. They got 4 first round picks. I know 3 of them are going to be high picks, but for the next 3 years, for the next 4 years, they're going to have 2 first round picks. And as far as the Lakers, I mean, Anthony Davis and LeBron James by itself, can they win the championship? I don't think so. But if they added another star with a max deal, yes, they probably could contend, because the Golden Warriors are not going to be fully healthy next year because of KD and Klay. Cycle return. Klay could be back next year, but who knows about KD? I mean, it was a huge trade. It shook up the league. LeBron gets another superstar.
They don't have a roster, though.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have Kuzma, you have LeBron. You have Davis. You have a bunch of unknowns.
And Stevenson.
Besides that, the question is now with those two guys, they're kind of fronting that ship. Who knows how long LeBron will stay with the Lakers long term? But do you see the Lakers kind of supplementing their roster with a free agent this offseason? I mentioned, I believe the free agency period starts in early July, around the 6th. I'm thinking they could add point guard from Charlotte, Kemba Walker, who's been a 3-time All-Star, was all NBA this year. Can play a good point guard position and still put up a good amount of points. I mean, he put up over 25 points per game while Walker this year, and played in every game almost 35 minutes a game on a below-average Hornets team. And he's been there his whole career. He's also a guy that not only does he play a significant amount of minutes, but he hasn't missed a lot of time too. So a team that gets his services will have that advantage, in addition to some of his talents on top of that. And, he's a decent shooter, not a great three-point shooter, but, is kind of a multi-tool player when it comes to things he can do on both ends of the court. Do you think that the Lakers will get anybody in free agency, any big names to add on to LeBron, the roster with LeBron and Davis?
As you said, I think Kemba is one name. Kyrie is still floating out there. I think he's going to Brooklyn. There's rumors of Butler wanting to go there, but I think he comes back. Here's an interesting thought. KD opts out and goes to the Lakers. He sits for a year, and then those three team up in a year. That could be possible. But
I don't think KD would do that.
Yeah. I don't think that's a smart move for KD.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people were talking about the kind of overused narrative of that a lot of these big name upcoming NBA free agents, that they're either going to go to New York, meaning the Knicks, or Brooklyn, or the Lakers. A lot of people think that Kawhi, if he weren't going to stay with the Raptors, that he would go to the Clippers, I heard. But I actually got some interesting things. I was doing I submitted a question on The Athletic for one of the NBA beat reporters. I'll have to look up his name. And he actually made an interesting point. He said that he thinks Butler returns to Philadelphia. Harris is a question mark on returning to Philadelphia. Kawhi probably stays for a couple years with Toronto. Kyrie, like you mentioned, there's a lot of speculation that he goes to Brooklyn, and that Kemba Walker probably goes to Lake Show with LeBron and Davis. So it should be pretty interesting. I think it's a bad trade for the Lakers unless they win a championship in a few years from now. If they don't win a championship, then it really didn't mean much. You saw when Boston, when they got, you know, like Kevin Durant, you know, so many years ago, and it ended up working out. And I know they didn't give up as much collateral to Minnesota for that Garnett trade as the Lakers did. But regardless, you know, people are going to look at it like that. That if, you know, if they don't win at least one championship, if not multiple ones, you know, it's going to be, you know, null and void, and nobody's really going to care much about it. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. I think you know, Toronto will have a good team next year. I think the Sixers get most of their pieces back. And I think it'll be a very interesting offseason. One more thing before we get to the Twitter mailbag. Somebody made an interesting point that with the Davis trade, potentially between trading draft picks or just, you know, selecting the draft picks and not moving it, that the Pelicans have a chance to control the Lakers' draft for the next 5 to 7 years with this Davis trade, with the amount of picks that they got in return for him. So, you know, that's really interesting to me. I don't know if you have any other comments on that, but that just really sticks out, the fact that they were able to fleece them for that much. And, you know, I thought it was kind of an interesting trade, and we'll see what happens from there. So,
yeah, I think
we'll do one. Sorry, did you have any more comments?
Oh, yeah, I think the Pelicans won that trade, and unless the Lakers, as you said, win the championship. Do you think they should need to win more than one in order to?
Maybe just one. If LeBron was younger, I would say more than one. But obviously, you got a new head coach. You got some new guys behind the scenes there, you know, pushing all the buttons. So it should be interesting. I think they need to win at least one. I'm not going to say multiple, but at least one for it to be a success for Los Angeles in the trade. So we're going to get to a new segment we're doing, or we've incorporated the last couple shows. You can tweet us at Philly SP Podcast. That's the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. Our Twitter handle, again, is Philly at Philly SP Podcast. But we'll get into, real quick, the Twitter mailbag for this week. We got a few questions. The first one comes from Why Man Podcast, and that's at Why Man Podcast 1. And they asked, would you trade Joel Embiid now before his injuries and his salary add up to him being untradeable for the Sixers down the road, which is actually interesting. I'll start with you on that, Eric. What are your thoughts?
Oh, that's a tough question. Let's put it this way. It would depend on who we would get back. Is there anybody in the NBA right now that's worth trading him for? Maybe Giannis, but he's just another Ben Simmons that shoots better, I guess. So, right now, I'll say no.
Yeah, it's interesting because he started so young. By the time his contract ends, I know he's making a lot. And there's a lot of factors that go into it. But by the time his contract potentially ends, in 2023 with the Sixers. He'll be 29. So, you know, it should be pretty interesting. He'll still be pretty young. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for you know, a young guy who can spread the floor and is a leader in the locker room, puts his emotions out on the line. I don't think he's a guy that you need to trade. You know, I know there's a lot of bad contracts in sports, but, you know, I think, you know, it's an interesting question, but I don't see it being a scenario where that, you know, his injuries will continue to pile up, despite the fact that he's a big guy. You know, he plays a fair amount of minutes since he's been healthy and when he is healthy. So I wouldn't trade him. And there's certain guy at 29, I don't think he is untradeable, let's put it that way, which is when the contract ends. So it should be interesting to see what happens, though, because it's such a long deal. But we have to get through these real quick. The next question is from Too Sweet Wrestling at Too Sweet Pod. And they ask, when it comes down to Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler, do you want to see both get the max in Philly or only one? I'm going to start off with that just because I think that's a really easy one. I'd like to see Butler here, max. Harris, I would like back, but I don't think he's as physically gifted as Butler. I think Butler just does more on the court. So that's a really straightforward answer for me. What are your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree with you. It's easily Butler.
Yeah, so Harris could be back, but it might not be for the deal that people want or expect. And Redick could be back as well. So we'll see what happens. Let's put it that way. This question comes from the Sidelines podcast at the FTS pod, and they ask, what third star do you see the Lakers getting, if any? We kind of touched on that a few minutes ago. I'm going to say Kemba Walker from Charlotte. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think Kyrie could go there as much as – I don't think he wants to be a third wheel. And I think Kemba is the perfect fit for them because he can be the third wheel. I think he wants to win a championship too. It's like he is a perfect fit for them because he doesn't need the ball all the time like Kyrie does. So, yeah, I think it's Kemba.
Yeah, I think Kyrie goes to Brooklyn and a lot of the other players stay. We'll get to the final question here before we go. This one comes from Christian Lance at the _ real Lance. And he asked, will AD Anthony Davis win a title with the Lakers if they don't get another superstar? And he has a little emoji like, thinking there. I don't think he'll win a title if the Lakers don't get any more pieces. They need a roster around them. I know you need role players, but I think that's pretty straightforward. So it's a good question, but I think it's no doubt that they have a kind of an incomplete roster for now. So, I know that they have a lot of work to do. So.
Yep. And Anthony Davis is injury prone too. So he does get injuries just like Embiid. So he's not exactly the most durable guy either. So, and LeBron's getting up there, and he's been injured the last couple of years. I mean, especially last year.
I
don't think it's a guarantee they're going to win anything. I know they're the favorites by Vegas, but I don't know how they're favorites, but.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens where the chips fall and who goes where, but they definitely have a lot of work to do. But that's all for tonight for another episode of the Philly Sports Cave and the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Kyle Lutz with Eric Jacinto.
Thank you, Kyle. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. Bye.